Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuckinistas? What the fuck buddies? What the fucksters? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's it going? How you doing? How's your diet been? How's your exercise regimen? Is everything okay? Don't get distracted on the treadmill, all right? I've been that guy where you start stumbling and you grab the handrails and then you got to step off and straddle the thing so the belt keeps going, and then you got to kind of lift yourself up and get your feet going a little bit so it matches up with the belt and then get back on. Don't do that right now. Don't do it, okay? Just pay attention. Everything all right? Keep your eye on the road. Hey, put it down. Put it down, all right? It's too early for that shit. Seriously. Come on. So, and also congratulations. These are all general. I want to talk about my dates a little bit because they are few and far, but they are real. Okay. I'm really performing places. Sorry, Bloomington next week sold out. Sorry, Minneapolis. All those shows at Acme are sold out. The following week after that in Denver. Denver, I believe there are still tickets the 21st and 22nd of September. And I'm sure there are tickets in Phoenix on October 13th at Stand Up Live. I don't always see Phoenix as necessarily my city. You know, when you do what I do, when you do the stand-up comedy out there in the world, some cities are better than others. I know I got some fans in Phoenix. My brother's in Phoenix. I've got people in Phoenix. But generally speaking, I don't know if I'm everybody's cup of tea in Phoenix, but that's all right. I've acclimated to being an acquired taste. It's okay, as long as that acquired taste involves enough people to earn me a living, it's fine with me. Don't want everybody to like you. If everybody likes you, there's something deep being hidden. That's my experience, and then everybody who likes you generally finds out around the same time. So today, I talked to Bert Kreischer. Kreischer's got a special coming out. It's out. I'm sorry. I just apologize to myself for remembering something. His Netflix special, Secret Time, is streaming now. I think it's his first special, his first big one. He's very excited about it. I love Bert, and it was a fun conversation we had here. And after that, I got Ian Bagg. Ian Bagg's a guy, he's always been on the periphery. I've always seen him. I've known him, I feel like, my whole life. I remember when he came down from Canada, and we were coming up in New York, and I just would see him around occasionally and be like, "What have you been doing, Ian Bagg?" And so finally, after years, I said, "Come on, let's talk on the show. I don't know you, but you've been sort of on the periphery of my attention and in my world for, you know, decades, it feels like. You know, at least got to be almost 20 years. So Ian Bagg is also here today, and that's what's going on. So Bert Kreischer, the new Netflix special, Secret Time, is streaming now. I love talking to Bert. He's actually a guy that makes you feel happy and good and fun. This is me and Bert Kreischer. So this is a big Netflix special.
This is the big one. I'm super excited.
And it's your first Netflix special?
First Netflix. Did a Showtime like 2 years ago.
Oh.
That was where I told the machine story.
Yeah.
And then, now I'm doing Secret Time.
So did they pay for it?
Yeah.
Oh, good, man.
Yeah.
So this is you're part of the 2018 pack.
I guess so.
I did one last year, Joe Coy.
Yeah.
Like they weren't going to give him one, and he's like, "Fuck it, I'm going to get one." So he made his own and then pushed it on Netflix.
It was a huge special too.
Yeah,
his special was amazing.
It was huge.
Yeah, and it did amazing for him. He's doing but he's an interesting guy because he still does clubs every now and then.
No, but I think he has markets.
But he does clubs because there's more money in clubs. Like he'll do the big theaters, like 6,000 seaters
when he can.
Yeah, and then he'll just go to the Addison Improv and sell out 14 shows.
Yeah, do the door deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a lot more work. Not that it's a problem, but I mean that's the trade-off you're making. But I think he just sold out the entire island of Oahu. Like he just
that makes sense.
Seriously, he's taping his next special there, and he's like, "I sold 30,000 tickets." I'm like, "Holy fuck! I don't even know what I would do for that many people."
I know I'd take my shirt off. I'm not taking my shirt off for 30,000 people.
It'd be on the big screen, too.
Oh, yeah. Everybody can see. I can't even gain some weight, make it good for them.
Where did you shoot this one?
Philly at the Troc.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a really cool venue.
I've been there. I've played there twice. So old porno theater. It was.
Yeah.
It's got a weird history, and the way they've got the stage situated is great. Sort of like they've opened up the back of the, you know, you, and it looks bigger than it is. It's an intimate 400 or so because it's got those balconies.
It's and then we took the stage and dropped it down so that I was more in the crowd because you're literally, it's a rock venue, so you're like 6 feet above the crowd.
Yeah.
So we dropped it down, and instead of doing like a little like diving board, which is normally what they do.
Right, you mean the little platform, right?
Yeah,
you walk
I did,
down to.
I did an oval. So you could
in
walk,
front.
So you could work the whole room.
So you came down from the main stage and you created an oval at the bottom there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
It was a dream setup. My daughter, this is my favorite story about this.
Yeah.
First show goes all right. Not that great, to be honest with you.
What happened?
Tape two. It rained and the generators went out.
Oh, really?
And so
problems.
And so the
audience
had to wait in the rain for like an hour and a half while we fixed that.
Yeah.
So the show's an hour and a half late.
People kind of like trying to shake out their umbrellas and shit.
They're losing their buzz. I mean, even I'm sitting there in the back just sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
And so first show did not go off the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
Okay, but not great.
Right.
Before we had left that night, my oldest daughter said, "Hey, Dad, break a leg." They were in Philly with us.
Yeah.
"Hey, Dad, break a leg."
Yeah.
And my youngest daughter goes, "Hey, Dad, break two legs." And my wife goes, "That's not why they say it." She goes, "What?" She goes, it's back from Shakespearean time. They'd want them to stomp when something was really good, they'd stomp. So you'd want to do so well that they'd break their legs when they were performing.
Right.
The audience would break their legs.
Oh, I get it.
So Isla goes, "How many people in the audience?" My wife goes, 500. She goes, "Hey, break 1,000 legs." So the first show goes off mediocre, right? Second show,
yeah.
My buddy Tony's producing it, and he's like, you know, let's have a great show.
Yeah.
Have a great show, like good luck, like look at me, like have a great show.
Right.
So we go out, and it starts going. You know when you're in the pocket,
yeah.
And it's just moving right, and you're like, don't fuck this up.
Right.
And I get to the one joke, the one booze drinking joke I think I have in the show,
yeah.
Where it's in the trailer, but I had gone to my daughter's parent-teacher conference hungover and still high from the night before. I'd brought a coffee and two Diet Cokes, and I murdered the coffee before the meeting even starts. And then in the meeting, they're saying they're going to have to hold her back, and I'm like, fuck. So I grab a Diet Coke, take a sip, and as it hits my lips, I realize I have a Coors Light in a parent-teacher conference. It gets a laugh, right? But then this was the line I liked.
Is it true?
Oh, 100% true. 100% true. And Mark, I brought two fucking Coors Lights to this meeting. I brought two Coors Lights. But the joke is when a beer hits your lips at 7 in the morning in a parent-teacher conference, that's like a finger in your ass at an orgy. You got to real quick decide what kind of man you are. Do you pull away from it or do you push back into it? And I said, I push back into it. And the second I said that, you know, it's Philly, a beer, big beer drinking, they start stomping on the ground like crazy in the truck, which is like 200 years old.
Yeah.
And all I'm thinking is, oh my God, the show's fucked. The house is going to come down.
Right.
And then I hear my daughter going, break 1,000 legs. I go, and I get chills telling it right now. I'm like, we're here. And it was the best show I've ever had in my life. I walked off stage and I was like, if we got audio and we got cameras on that, I'm the happiest man in the world.
And you did.
Yeah. And so I'm super excited. I mean, I'm fatter than I'd want to be in it.
Yeah.
But fuck it.
But I mean, that was sort of your thing. This,
I guess.
No, but what do you mean? You guess
I was fat until Segura said I was fat. I never thought I was fat.
Every picture I've seen of you, it's just like you're in a bikini bathing suit or something.
Yeah, that's because I'm from Florida.
Yeah. But like, what, you were looking at yourself thinking like, that's a svelte guy? He's really in shape?
No, but I have whatever the opposite of anorexia is.
Yeah.
Where I look at myself, I go, I don't look that bad. Now everyone points it out like crazy.
Really?
Oh my God. I mean, even Netflix.
Yeah.
Like Netflix.
Really? They said you were fat? Were they?
Netflix, you know how those they're like, hey, we're going to give you a billboard.
Uh-huh.
And you get excited.
Yeah,
I mean, guys
right.
like me and you go, billboard.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Where's it
going
to be?
Yeah. That's like someone going, hey, you're telling your mom, we're getting you a landline.
I got to take a picture of that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I go, great. And they go, here are our two choices. We're really leaning for number two. Number two is just a shot of my belly. No face. Just a shot of my belly that says Bert Kreischer's Secret Time.
Yeah.
And I saw it and I was like, and I didn't see the right one. And I replied, I go, I don't know about that. And they're like, we're really attached to it. We really think it's funny. We really think it would be great for the special.
Yeah.
And then I saw it again and I was like, ah, fuck it. It's funny as shit.
Yeah.
And so,
it's just your belly?
It's just my belly. Just my belly on Melrose Avenue.
Your round belly?
Yeah.
Oh my God. But like... So they start stomping at the truck. That's an old place, right? It's such that is like a great venue, though.
It's amazing.
It's so, because it's a theater, but somehow it's intimate.
We found
top of you.
We found it's great because it's it's they built them the way they should have been told when there was no audio.
Yeah.
So like it's really intimate, yeah, really on top of you. And my daughters got to come earlier, and we got to explore the truck, and we found ticket stubs from like 1918.
Get out of here.
Yeah, and they and
where
the, up in the top, the top.
Oh, you went on the rafters?
We went into the way, the closed part on the third floor.
Oh, really?
And I went to the guy. I said, hey, man, we found these.
Yeah.
You mind if we keep them? And he's like, yeah. And so we got these old ticket stubs from like 1918.
Oh, so like your daughter must have been like, wow, you found treasure.
Oh, they're going on my poster. Fuck them.
Yeah.
I'm putting them in my man cave.
Oh, yeah? You don't get them?
They're going to see this special and hate me. I just talk shit about them the whole time.
You do, but oh, nice yeah. shit. How old are they now?
I don't know.
Is it kids? You don't know?
Yeah, no.
Is it,
12,
the estimate?
12 and 14. They just changed ages. So I go back to like 10 and 13, but 12 and 14.
Oh, my God.
One's in high school.
Uh-huh.
And the other one I'm doing a bit now about her having her period.
Uh-huh. Oh, great. That's going to be great for them.
Yeah, I know.
They're going to be really happy when their friends
get to
watch it.
I don't know another way to do it, Mark. Like, I don't know another way to do it other than just tell about exactly what's going on in my life.
But not unlike... You know, when you have a wife or a girlfriend and you're thinking about doing a bit that involves them, you usually kind of try to put it past them. You or try to get a, you know, them to okay it.
Yeah, but have you ever here's the caveat.
I just don't know how that works with kids.
Have you ever taken a bit that happened with you and then it works on stage and it's already worked?
Yeah.
And then you go back to the wife
sure.
and try to retrofit it. Like,
oh, yeah, definitely.
Hey, you're cool with me talking about right, you farting right. during oral sex. And yeah. she's like, huh? Yeah. You're like, never mind. You're like, fuck it, I'll just do it on the road.
Right, that's it, like the secret part. Like, I've done bits where I'm like, all right, this is between us. I say that to an audience.
I say secret time.
Yeah.
I go secret time, and I tell this guy, I go, my daughters are dumb as shit. See, but don't tell, like, because I'm on the road. I'm in Omaha.
Oh, that's what that means. Yeah.
So no one, like,
sure.
my kids will never see it. And then... We get to the getting ready to the tape, and I'm like, "Well, shit, this bit about my daughters is killing right now."
Yeah,
and then you're like, "Fuck it up." And then so I had to clear some stuff with them.
Yeah,
like go through it and be like, "Hey, I call you guys stupid. Are you guys cool with that?" And they're like, "Yeah."
Uh huh.
I was like, "All right, cool."
Uh huh.
And then I kind of ran by some bits, but some bits, you know.
Yeah, they're just going to have to take the hit.
They'll be smoking pot in college, and they're like, oh, shit, that's your dad.
That's your dad.
And they'll be like, oh, I've never seen this.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God, that was when I was 12.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's, I think. But I make fun of myself as much as them, and I think it's even keeled.
No, sure. I mean, I think that's a good rationalization, and, you know, I've made that rationalization. Like, when they go like, that hurt my feelings, you're like, but did you see me hurt myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Hey,
yeah.
guys, you guys needed new teeth, right? Yeah. This is how we pay for it.
That's how you do it.
A little bit.
I have no idea what the repercussions of this generation and maybe the one before us, because I don't remember, some comics, you know, talk about their family, but not as specifically as we do. You know, like, there's a sort of honesty to comedy now because we all want to make it as personal as possible. We have no idea what the repercussions on that next generation is going to be, your kid. So I would start making notes, see how it progresses, see what kind of adults they, just as a research project.
It's interesting. I never thought of it that way. It was originally, take my wife, please. And I'm sure people were like, so that's your wife?
Yeah.
And she's like, he's a comedian.
Right, right.
And then it
There's
cut
a distance.
Yeah, and then it cut to my wife's gaining weight, and everyone's like, wow, that's her in the back row.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah, honey, it's...
Yeah, yeah. And then it comes to, like, when I put my finger in my wife's ass, it's like, wait, what's happening? That seemed real.
Dude, I had to clear it with my dad. Because I'm talking about my dad in the special, and my dad's not that guy. Like, he's not out there, kind of like, no social media, no nothing. And he's got friends.
I know. I hurt my dad, yeah.
And so I had to be like, hey, Dad, I say a few things about, like, I talk about him spanking me for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And my dad will go always goes, oh, you got a good imagination, buddy.
Yeah.
And that shit never happened.
Oh.
I was like, no, I definitely got spanked. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
It was 1975. You don't think I got spanked?
Yeah.
And he was like, I never hit you the way you say. And you're like, okay, just so you know, I'm telling everyone the way I say.
Yeah.
And so he was like, and he was cool. He was like, look, whatever you say, you're a comedian. It's about getting laughs. I'm cool with it. I love you. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
And so you're like, all right, good. And you're like, well, watch the special.
And?
I don't know. He hasn't seen it yet.
I wrote some shit about I've always busted on my dad.
Yeah.
But, you know, earlier on, it was kind of hostile. I was kind of mad at him.
I remember.
Yeah. But then, like, later, like, in the book, like, he, like, it got bad. Like, he didn't talk to me for a while.
I remember.
We talked about it?
No, yeah. I'm a fan of yours. Oh, right. Like, my wife and I have had dinner talking about conversations you've had with people.
And I ended up with sending him some money.
Oh, they were good.
It was so funny, though, because I just started telling this story. Like, when he was really mad at me about the book, I'm like, I got my side of it, you know? If you think that I've cost you something, you know, like, if you think that I've somehow hurt your reputation or whatever, you know, what do you think I owe you?
Really?
Yeah, this is a while back. We're okay now. I'm gonna send him some money.
So wait, what's the price point? What do I need?
No, he goes, $100,000. And I'm like, I'll send you five.
And he was like, all right, we're good.
Yeah. I think he just took a shot.
Oh,
yeah.
See, my mom's the opposite. My mom is dying to be in the special.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, and my dad is like, you have any bits about your mom? And I was like, no. For some reason, my mom just kind of operated in that, like, almost like I'm not allowed to have dreams type of woman role back in the 70s.
Weird, like that, which one you blame.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I think as I get older that the one we don't blame is probably the one. It's probably the...
Definitely.
You know, to be like, whoever's taking the hit, it's the other one. Just like, you know, because I've been pretty hard on my dad, but when I think about my mom, I'm like, oh, fuck. She did it.
And I'm sure there's parts of my dad that's like, at least he's not bringing up the real shit.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, there's some real shit that went down in our family where he's like, well, thank God he's just saying about spanking. Everyone's spanked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, not the weird uncle or whatever.
Oh, no, the cheating on my wife.
Oh, that's tough.
Like, I don't talk about that shit, but...
Yeah, I don't know if I talked about... Yeah, I don't know. They've both taken a hit. My mom seems to be a better sport about it, but, you know, lately, I don't know. Like, I did... Even on my last special, I took a shot at my dad. But I've tried to get a little better about it. Like, I do that line about, like, do you remember the day you realized your dad was a fucking idiot?
I do. I do. My uncle told me. I was sitting on the steps of my girlfriend's apartment.
Yeah.
And my parents were going through a breakup.
Yeah.
And I was holding my dad responsible entirely. Yeah. I was like... Fuck him. He's dead to me.
Yeah.
And my uncle Jerry called me and he was like, first of all, you're a fucking idiot. Okay. Yeah. You understand your dad's a human being. He's a man. He has wants and he has needs. And one day you will understand that. Mark, I swear to God, as I'm sitting inside your house and we're talking about wanting things, I want a better. I want to call my dad and go, so when your midlife crisis started and you fucked everything up, how do I get in front of that?
Yeah. No, I know.
Because
exactly.
I feel like I'm right there with him, like stride to stride. And it's so funny because I resented him for having a midlife crisis at the same age I'm having it.
Yeah.
And you go, and now you feel like a weird connection where you...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I used to do a joke where I'm like, at some point as a man, you're going to have that, you know, sit down with your father and just, you know, look at him right in the eye and go like, okay, how do I avoid becoming you? Because it's happening and I want out. Is there any advice you can give me?
I've got my dad's body when he was my age.
Oh, boy.
Like, I can see it. Like, my dad's tits collapsed, like, where it was, like, muscle and then just, like, fat tit. And the other day, I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm getting my dad's breasts.
Oh, my God. So, wait, did you ask him?
No,
did you talk to him about it?
I haven't. Actually, this is, like, what we're talking about in the kitchen is, like, right on top of me.
So, is that, right, so you're just kind of putting that together that it might be the midlife thing happening?
I think so. I'm not, I just...
How old are you?
45. 45, and I think everything's going in the right direction. Yeah. I'm really happy with where I'm at. I love my life. I love my wife. I love my kids.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm insatiable. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I want more. Like, for most part, I've been doing it with drugs, alcohol, and food.
Yeah.
And then I just got to a point where I was like, all right, none of that shit's working. It's making me unhappy.
Yeah.
Not booze. Like, I was still drinking and I'll still smoke pot and I still trying to eat like shit. But I was like, I need to write this boat and find out what's at the base of it. And then immediately I was like, I want to spend money. Right. And then I was like, okay, we're.
But so how long you been like you're eating better and you're exercising?
I got a nutritionist.
Really?
Yeah. I got a nutritionist and I started getting, only because I don't want to be the old comic you see at the store who's drinking booze in the back at like 57 and shaking.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to be that guy. I'm not that. I was never that guy.
Right.
And I don't want to slide into that role.
Right.
And people go, oh, of course, that's Bert.
Yeah.
So, and then I got into, and I think it's all based on me and Tom's bully friendship of like picking on each other
and
loving
Segura,
each other.
Yeah.
But I started getting into running marathons and half marathons and triathlons.
Really? You're running every day?
I run today. I ran 3 miles this morning.
Yeah.
Ate healthy. Had a what looked like the identical shake that you had.
Yeah.
I've been eating avocado just like you eat it, little sprinkle of sea salt.
yeah.
Except I put red pepper flakes on it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And then, you know, like last night I didn't drink, so I knew I was coming here and I was like, I have a busy day today. So I think that has changed on me because last night I would have definitely drank. Like I just would have partied until
Why?
2
what
in the morning.
What happened last night?
Nothing. Nothing, Mark. Fucking nothing. I just would have drank.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that might be a problem.
Yeah, and so like I'm on this more of a path of like, let's get your shit done. Let's be a tad bit accountable.
Right. Well, no, like you got the itch, you know, so you're a guy, you got that thing, you got the compulsive bug, you know, and it's got to be, you know, you always need a little something.
Dude, I connected, so I met this nutritionist,
yeah,
Cynthia Sass is her name, and we started talking about eating habits. Me and you are very similar, me, you and Nikki Glaser are very similar in that I don't know how to eat healthy.
Yeah.
Like I can really quickly, I heard the podcast you did with her, and it was like hearing someone say, like, oh yeah, I was molested. And then you're like, wait, I think I was too. I was like, I think I have an eating disorder. I only know how to not eat. I know how to get my calories down to 900
yeah.
and not be happy and go right. to bed miserable and wake up miserable, but yeah. I don't know how to eat healthy.
Yeah, I'm trying to do it, you know.
Oh, I'm like
I like to eat all the time. That's the thing. It's like, I can eat healthy, but I still need to fucking eat all the time.
My problem is, I go to eat and I order two meals because I go, I want the meal I want. I should order, and then I want the meal I want.
Oh, so you get.
So I'll order two meals.
That's your thing, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I order appetizer. I go, make it rain.
Yeah.
For a while, that was my diet was not ordering appetizers.
Right.
I was like, that's my diet. I just won't order appetizers. I'm like, yeah. And even the other day, I said to the girls, I go, what do you guys want for lunch? It's Sunday. Yeah. I just done the triathlon. I felt like I accomplished it.
Sure. You reward yourself.
Yeah. Dude, after I did the marathon,
yeah.
I gained 15 pounds within a week. I was eating like I had a month to live. Like, I would just get pizzas, and I put ranch on the pizza, and then sriracha on the ranch. I was just
come on,
like
dude.
A fucking lunatic. And then at one point, I started going, I'm not drinking, but then that means I can drink root beer.
Yeah.
And so I was murdering root beers left and right. For me, it's impulse. Like, I can't, if you said to me, you want to have a cigar? I'd be like, yeah. I love that feeling.
Yeah,
I love right. that, like, trigger
yeah,
feeling.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, if you said, I haven't had a drink in 19 years.
Yeah.
You want to go get a cocktail, Bert? I'd be like, oh, darn, fuck my day. Let's go. Hey, by the way, congratulations
Thank
on that.
Thank you very much. Well, that's the thing is, like, it's always something. So I was, like, I was off the nicotine for a while, and then, like, I had a cigar here and there, but then it's only a matter of time for one a day, you know, and then maybe sometimes two.
Yeah.
Like, fucking real cigars, right? And then you're like, what am I doing to my mouth? What the fuck is happening? So I got this cold, and it got me off the fucking nicotine zone. So I haven't had a cigar in like 5 days, and now I'm sort of off the physical addiction of it.
Yeah.
But goddamn, like I feel that itch though. Like, oh, I just want something.
For me, it was that marathon. When I did the marathon, I quit smoking cigars because I was like, I would really feel the effect on my lungs the next day.
Sure.
And so I quit smoking weed and marathons for the marathon. And then I got to, like, I guess marathon was in like March, and I was like, I haven't smoked a cigar in 3 months. And then I was like, fuck it, I'll plan another thing, and then I'll keep away from that. And then I did the triathlon, and I went on a little bit of a bender on a tour that we did. But then I was like, all right, I'm back. And I think having these goals, like setting things up for me, kind of keeps me in on the straight and narrow.
Like you're in training.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Even though I still kind of go off with, I will go off every now and then.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, I can't, I don't know. Like, I get, like, I've kind of, like, reeled it in with the diet thing and, you know, eating healthier. Because I got the cholesterol thing. The doc said, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I got all that too.
You do?
Oh, of course.
You take pills?
I take blood pressure pills.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that kind of scared me, the like, genetic cholesterol problem, you know?
Yeah.
So with that went ice cream for the most part.
I know, dude. What about like, frozen yogurt?
Nothing.
Really?
No, like, I've been on this fucking sugar fast for months. It was only supposed to be 30 days. It's been 4 months. I took off, like, 10 pounds.
You look great.
Thanks, man. And I've been working out. But now I'm like, here's what you got to get into. And maybe this is the other side of the eating disorder. It's like, now that I'm like, I'm only eating basically no dairy, no rice, no beans, just fucking mostly fish, vegetables, and nuts, and avocados.
That's where I'm at.
That's it.
That's where I'm at.
But now I don't know how to get out of it. Because my trainer's like, maybe you should, you know, start doing some carbs, like some sweet potatoes. I'm like, I don't know.
Ooh, my wife made sweet potatoes last night, yeah. And I was like, I can't fuck with them. She's like, it's good for you. And I was like, it's good for you.
Yeah.
It's not good for me. Because there's not, I'm not going to have a what we call a serving of that.
Yeah.
I will
yeah.
have the rest of what is in that bowl.
Yeah. And it just, where does it stop? Then how, you know, like, how much have you lost?
I lost 13 pounds
yeah.
from my heaviest, and that was like, I went through a
on
tear.
On the special?
No, on the special, I was lighter than I am now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I was training for something.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, I was focused.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the special was done,
yeah.
I did the marathon, and then I ballooned up. I got, yeah. The biggest I got was like 250.
Was it fun?
Like ballooning up?
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing, Mark. I was like, I would go, we were doing a theater tour, and yeah. I'd go, and they'd have Tito's waiting backstage for mm-hmm. me, and I'd get in on an airplane, and they'd say, do you need anything for your green room? And I'd go, hey, what's the special food you got here?
Yeah.
And they go, oh, Coney's. You got to Detroit, you got to get the Coney's. I was like,
what are those, hot dogs?
Yeah, yeah, with the yeah. cheese and the yeah. chili, and yeah. I go, I want like 50 bucks worth of those. And they're like, okay. And then they just line them up in the back. And you're like, and people would come back. My sister was there.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, check these out. Coney's. And my sister's like me. She's like, oh, let's fucking murder them. And we're just murdering Coney's. Go to the next place. Hey, what's really big here? It was the best. And then I'd land in LA and I'd still be on that tear.
Yeah.
You know, there's an in and out right by LAX. I was like, I could murder one in and out. Yeah, I haven't yeah. had more breakfast yet.
Yeah,
I've already had out. A couple Tito's on the plane.
But you get off the plane, you're like, that's all that's on your mind, right?
Oh.
Yeah,
oh,
in and out.
Oh, Mark,
do you get
Mark,
a shake?
Mark. I'm already telling you. No, I don't do a shake. When I get off the plane in LAX, that is where I am like at my most vulnerable. Like, because I fly American all the time.
Yeah,
and so you got those roast beef sandwiches they make at that bar with the hot mustard.
At LAX?
At LAX. If you're down by 48, 49, you know, those gates,
yeah.
that little ball.
Yeah.
When you walk out, right to the right, there's a bar, and they have a roast beef sandwich with the hot mustard that you get down at Philippe's.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that, I know those guys by name. Like, when they see me, they're like, hey, roast beef? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll eat that on the car ride home. Taco truck next to that for a while.
Oh,
they got the burger place behind it. They got the fucking...
Oh, in that little food court now.
They got the macaroons off to the right.
Yeah. At the little French coffee place.
Dude.
Yeah.
And then you can get great sandwiches. They got the sandwich place that's on La Brea. I forget the name of it right now. Daphne Brogdon's husband owns it.
Daphne, what happened to that? That's right.
She married a restaurateur.
We go back to Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
That was one of my favorite television shows I've ever done. Do you remember? By the way, that's the best I've ever been on television in my entire life.
When you did that?
I've never been funnier in my life.
I wish somebody watched it.
Dude, do you remember they did the show, the part of, so Mark, just for those of you who don't, Mark had a show called Nevermind the Buzzcocks.
I did the American version of Nevermind the Buzzcocks for VH1. We shot like maybe 10 of them.
Yeah.
And nobody watched them. And there's no evidence of it anywhere.
They bring us on. I had tested to be a co-host of it.
Right.
And I didn't get it. And then I was like, okay. But they're like, hey, we want you to be on an episode. So the episode I did, it was the lead singer from Loverboy.
Right. Oh, that's right.
What's his name?
So excited.
I was so excited because they're like, the premise was they're going to put three people up on there and you got to guess which one's the lead singer from Loverboy.
Yeah.
And his name's Dave something, right?
Yeah.
And so they got three people and everyone's like going back and forth like, what do we do? It was, and I was like, oh, I can figure this out real quick. And they're like, yeah. And the three guys are standing out there looking to the way and I just go, hey, Dave. And one guy looks, I go, it's a guy in the middle. And everyone died laughing and I looked at you and you're like, oh, that's, you just totally destroyed the ruin the game. The game's like, and then, but that was the funniest.
But I thought it was like, didn't he do the hand thing?
I said, they're like, all right, ask him more questions. I go, all right, everyone turn around and do the sign, the Loverboy sign behind your back. And two of the guys were like, one's guy's flicking us off.
Yeah.
The other guy's doing a peace sign.
Yeah.
And then the one guy has the Loverboy sign. Yeah. And we're like, we got him.
Yeah, because I remember you got real excited.
You know me. Yeah. I'm a man who lives by his fluids.
Yeah.
Oh. And then I almost fucked Tiffany.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? Tiffany,
yeah.
The singer.
Yeah.
It was me, the kid from New Kids on the Block, the smaller one.
Yeah.
Joey or
something? I don't remember, yeah. That whole thing is a blur to me.
Sebastian Bach and Sherrod Small. And we're in the back in the green room smoking a joint.
Right.
And Tiffany's hitting on me, like just kind of flirting
with
me.
Get out of here.
And she goes, we should hang out in L.A. And I was like, okay. And she was like, yeah. Well, it's like, yeah, something like that. Yeah. I was like, cool. And she walks away, and yeah. Sebastian Bach's got a joint in his mouth. He's like, you're going to fuck Tiffany. You're going to fuck Tiffany. I can't believe this happened. You're going to fuck Tiffany. And I was like, I'm excited. I'm like, me too. I know. Yeah. I know. And then she comes in. We all talk a little bit. Joey McIntyre's there. And she goes, all right, guys, take care. And she leaves. And everyone's like, oh, you didn't get her number. I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, you know what? This is a good story as it is. And they're like, yeah. And pass a joint around one more time, have a beer, I think. And then all of a sudden her manager comes in and goes, Tiffany would like to have you give you her number, and hands me her number. And I can see Sebastian Bach shaking and Joey McIntyre shaking and Sherrod Small. And we're all like, and he leaves. And they're like, it's going to happen. Like, it was the funnest. That was my favorite. One of my favorite shows I've ever done in my life. Oh,
what happened with Tiffany?
Cut to 3 months later, I'm in LA with my buddy Eddie, and I've told everyone this story about Tiffany, right?
Yeah.
I've told everyone this story.
Right.
And we're
about
driving.
About the phone number.
Yeah, about the phone number, and I don't follow through with that.
Right.
Anyone who gives me their phone number, I'm suspect of.
Yeah.
So we're driving on Wilshire, crossing Santa Monica, you know, by kind of out where the Playboy Mansion is a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm with my buddy Eddie, and I'm looking. We're pulling next to this black Mercedes.
Yeah.
And it is keyed top to bottom. Whore, bitch. C-word all across the side. Just not the C, but the actual word written all in the door. And we are reading this like, oh, my God. Whose car is this? And the window rolls down, and it's Tiffany. She goes, Bert? And I was like, Tiffany? She's like, you never called me. And I was like, I'm definitely not calling now. I don't know what you did to get your car keyed that bad, but I went out of that. She's still hot. I don't give a shit.
All right, buddy. Well, that was good. Well, congratulations.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much.
On the special and on, you know, getting healthy and everything. You seem great.
I'm in a good place.
You always
right
seem
now.
Pretty chipper, though. I've never seen you in a dark place.
Yeah, I don't. I like having a good time. I always say there's.
I know,
there's
but
comics.
Like you. But you know, sometimes you think it's your shtick. But you're like, I think even when you're not doing all the things that. That hurt you or that you shouldn't do, you seem pretty chipper.
I think, I always say this, like, I got into comedy to giggle.
Yeah.
Like, I like giggling. I like.
Yeah.
And it's like any night at a comedy club for me is just giggling.
Yeah.
Like, you see someone work and you're like, oh, like, I can call back things you said.
Yeah.
On stage and go, oh, I got, I call them skipper fingers where your fingers go up like this and they start wiggling. You go, oh, shut up. I remember a set you did in the belly room and you just were ranting about the store. And I'm in the back going, oh, yeah, I'm just happy. I just like being a comic. That's it.
No, it's great. Yeah. I mean, you know, some days are better than others, but it's great.
Yeah.
So when you can watch your friends and like, you know, still get a kick out of them, dude. Some dudes.
I would say I'm lucky. I have my friends are the funniest people in the world.
Like, who's your inner circle? Segura, Burr?
Segura, Burr, Rogan, Al Madrigal. Like, I put you in
how's
there.
How's Al doing?
Al's doing great. I just had breakfast with him and Burr yesterday.
Oh, are you part of that operation?
All Things Comedy, yeah.
Yeah.
And we do my cooking show, Something's Burning. I'd love to have you on it.
Okay.
Whenever.
Is it a podcast?
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No. It's a video?
It's a video. I do. It's a cooking show. It's like a 40-minute cooking show.
For All Things Comedy?
For All Things Comedy. It's getting big numbers.
Yeah.
And I just go in and I cook a meal. I'm not a real good cook.
Yeah.
But I cook a meal for my friends.
Yeah.
And we just bullshit.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's mostly people making fun of me being a bad cook and drinking.
Where can people see that?
See it on YouTube, on All Things Comedy's YouTube. And we're making more. I think we're expanding and doing more. And they're allowing a little more room for us to create. I think that was our meeting yesterday. And so last night I was shooting promos for my special because I like that shit.
Yeah.
Shooting stuff on Instagram.
Yeah.
And the promo I was doing was, hey, it's Bert Kreischer, and I'm here at the store. I was hoping you'd be there last night because you'd be perfect for this.
I was supposed to be, but I got stuck in a recording session. I was supposed to be on Tripoli show.
I know. I was on that show too. So I wanted you on this bad because the premise was, it's Bert Kreischer, I'm at the store, and I'm asking my friends, the best comics in the world, how you should enjoy a comedy special. So the question is, should you watch it alone or with people? Should you drink or smoke weed or watch it sober? Should you watch it on an iPad, a TV, or a
yeah. I like watching them alone, generally, so you have to look at the other person like, huh? Anytime you watch a comedy special with someone else that you like the comic, you feel like, I'm going to sell you on this guy. You know,
I did that with my wife. Nanette came out and said, hey, you should watch this. Like, it's, and you know, my wife's just trashing it. And I'm like, hey, now you're making me side with her. Like, please don't do this. Like, just, I do that with, like, I put on Dimitri Martin's special. And my wife's like, I don't get it. And I'm like, I don't know if I can. Maybe we should decide. Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife likes Bill Burr.
Yeah.
Like, she loves him.
Yeah.
She likes the only thing she'll really enjoy is your podcast and Bill Burr.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yes.
I feel like I'm in good company.
Yeah. Two guys I am absolutely nothing like.
What about you? She like you? No, get tired of it.
Give it 5 more years. Yeah,
I've seen this act every day.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's not whatever you're seeing on stage for an hour. I got 23 other ones that would disprove whatever your argument is.
Yeah, she's the kind of woman that when someone goes, must be rough living with Bert, she's like, you have no idea. And then we'll just start spilling. I go, honey, just could have been like, yeah, you know, comics.
not like this morning.
His semen tastes bad when he drinks too much. I'm like, they don't need to know that. Like, don't tell them that.
Come on.
That's true.
Good talking to you.
I love you, man. Thank you.
I love you, too. Huh? Happy Bert. I don't know if he's happy, but he's excited. He gets me excited, and he gets people excited. That's what he does. He's a fun guy. His new Netflix special, Secret Time, is streaming now. So Ian Bagg, as I said, a guy I've kind of known. He's been around for a long time. He's always been there. I've always been like, hey, there's Ian Bagg. And now here's Ian Bagg on my show. His podcast, National Bagg Radio, is available from All Things Comedy. This is me talking to Ian Bagg. I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a couple days, right?
Has been, right?
Yeah.
Like, when the fuck? I can't, like, wait, it was one of those things where I think I saw you and I'm like, oh, shit, Ian's got to do the show.
You know what? It's funny because I go in spurts with you. I'll see you in just random places.
Right.
I ran into you in Australia.
Right.
Yeah.
When was that?
That was...
For the festival or when I was doing
the
a show?
Yeah.
That was a few years ago.
That was, I want to say, 2010.
And you were doing like a one-dude thing there? That's what you do there.
Yeah, go over there and did it. And it was fun.
So Australia. And then I saw you, where, at the store or something?
I seen this store a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's when we set this up?
I think it had just been set up and then we just ran into each other.
Oh,
randomly.
Okay.
Because I cruise in and out of the store. I'm very quick in there.
Uh-huh.
I don't just hang. I'm one of those guys that goes in and gets
Why?
Out.
You afraid?
Oh, yeah. I'm one of those guys that... I don't like hugging people, and sometimes I don't just like talking to people, so I just get out.
There's nothing but trouble over there.
There is nothing but trouble.
Like, if you get, like, sometimes I'm there late. Like, I go in and do my spot, but, like, after, like, 10:30, 11, something happens.
Something definitely happens.
From, like, 11 to 2, it's, like, a whole different, things get a little chaotic, it's a little scattered.
Yeah,
what's going on in here?
Mm-hmm. I actually just did something that you might be interested in.
What?
I bought a house in, on the East Coast of Virginia.
Really?
And I just happened to be out there. My wife is from out there in Cape Charles, and I was...
You have kids?
No. I'm doing all these renovations on it, and I started doing a podcast with a contractor of mine, a friend of mine. about me trying, because I don't know, you said to me, I have to put a kitchen in here, and I just thought, I wonder what he knows about doing kitchen, because I know nothing about doing stuff, so I just end up in these situations where I'm like, I need to ask questions. So
that's good, because if you're actually doing a podcast with a contractor, you kind of hold him accountable, so you could do the entire arc of the renovation, and then when he fucks you on the bill, you can be like, this did not work out the way I planned.
Exactly, and I don't hire him. I just ask him questions, and then have somebody else.
Interrogate him, like, what is this charge for?
Yeah.
I don't remember you being here that many hours.
Nails? Who uses nails in 2018?
That's crazy. What are you, primitive?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to remember, like, where, like, I first met you in New York. I think you came there as a child. You were friends with Bonnie McFarlane, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really? I met you in Montreal first?
Yep.
Really?
Yep, the Montreal Comedy Festival.
When was that?
1996.
Really? Isn't that wild?
It was...
I was anybody. And was I wandering around for Comedy Central? Interviewing people?
Yeah, you may have been, and doing sets, and I remember where it was. It was at the Comedy Works.
95, 96, and like one of the packed Comedy Works shows.
Yeah, one of the packed Comedy Works shows, and you gave me, I had only been doing comedy for a year, and you were nice to me.
We were up in the dressing room kind of deal?
We were up in the dressing room and hanging in the stairwell.
Right.
It was Attell, it was Louis C.K.
Right.
Yeah, it was all these guys.
95, 96, something like that, right?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah, and you lived there.
I lived in Vancouver. I had hitchhiked out to see what the Montreal Comedy Festival was all about.
You hitchhiked from Vancouver to Montreal? That's like, that's like 1,500 miles,
across,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's across the... Yeah,
the entire country.
Yeah. Yeah.
How, and
two rides.
You could, really?
Yeah.
Trucks?
Nope. Just random guys. Yep.
And what did you guys get, hotel rooms? I mean, did you go straight through?
Straight through. I was that age where you just go straight through, and they were I guess they were delivering something. So even though they weren't in trucks, so they wanted to get it done too.
So where'd you grow up though?
I grew up in northern British Columbia, a little town called Terrace, BC, up near Ketchikan, Alaska.
Oh, so that's on the west side.
West side, yeah.
Oh man, so like what was going on up there? Like how many people in that?
It was 10,000 random people in the middle of nowhere, logging, mining.
It's pretty though.
Oh yeah, if you like outdoors, it is beautiful. If you don't like many people and you like the outdoors, and
why were you up there? How come?
My dad was a heavy duty mechanic, worked on trucks, and my mom was a nurse, and that's why I lived up there. So
they needed a nurse, and they needed
I think it was more my dad.
Lumber trucks.
Yeah, had to put the guys that drive the trucks. My dad would say were idiots, so they had to always put it back together.
Really?
So yeah, that's he'd come back and tell me. He'd tell me about the squarehead German all the time that would ruin the truck.
Squarehead German.
I had no idea. I'm just like,
what does that mean?
I have no idea. But in my head, all I could see was he couldn't wear a hard hat because of his head. That's what I thought.
Oh, squarehead German.
Yeah.
That's the one thing you remember about your childhood. Yeah. Your dad complaining about a specific German fella.
Yeah.
Squarehead.
He was also the gunsmith in town.
Your dad was?
No, the German fella.
The German. Yeah, so he knew him.
Oh, yeah. They were friends. But he'd call him the squarehead German.
What's a gunsmith do?
He would, fix everybody's guns in town.
Sort of like a knife sharpener when your trigger went, or you just bring the gun in and maybe he'd clean it or straighten
he'd sell
it out.
He would sell some guns. Yeah. And he would also, I remember going over there.
Yeah.
And he would he would put the bullets, he would take all the shells and
load the shotgun shells.
Yeah, load them all
with
back
the machine.
Up. Yeah.
I know how to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a strange skill for a Jew in general, but I learned it at camp. I went to a camp once. Yeah. You put the shell down and then you put the powder and then you put a plastic wad thing to separate the powder from the shot. And
right.
Then you put the shot, whatever it is, buckshot or whatever gauge shot you're going to use.
Or the ball.
And then you seal the fucker up. Crimp it.
I remember that he would do 22. He was doing 22 shells all the time.
Well, that's like, I don't know how to do that. That's like real bullet shit. Shotgun shells, you just loading it up.
It's basically the same. I just remember it's powder. And
then you got to put a top on it.
Yep.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. So what, did you do a lot of shooting?
Not much. Yeah, just a little bit. I was never, my dad would take me out hunting and I'd be crying the whole time while shooting something. So it's like, all right, we'll try fishing. And then I hit him.
It's the worst experience.
Being
put in a position to kill something.
Just like,
fucking
I remember they'd bring home moose and would be hanging in the garage outside.
Who, like you got older
my
brothers?
Dad, no, my dad and his friends.
Friend?
They'd gut a moose in the garage. I just remember watching guts fall out, and I just like, I can't go out. And,
oh my God. And they're so big.
Oh, huge. They would have it on a winch that would take a motor out of a car. It was
just
hanging there. It was just huge.
I remember seeing moose when I lived in Alaska when I was a kid. I lived in Alaska.
Whereabouts?
Like Anchorage. I was little though. It was like 69 through 71. A couple years, my dad was in the service. And I remember us walking outside and coming face to face with a bull moose. About like 25 feet, 30 feet away, just that stare down. That's, where you're like, what's going to happen?
Well, what happens?
Nothing happened. But they're intense animals.
Yeah, then
they look wild.
When they're all fired up, when they're all horny, that's when you really, something would have happened.
Yeah?
Yeah, but when they're not all horned up.
Was there a lot of them around where you live?
Yeah, we'd see them all the time.
Caribou too?
Not so much caribou. Bear, deer, moose, that's most
moose.
Of them. Yeah. So
what'd you end up shooting when you were a kid?
What did I end up missing?
Yeah. You never hit nothing?
I never hit anything. Yeah. It just
I killed a bird once, not even for hunting, just for fucking bullshit, and I never really recovered from it.
It
just broke a little part of my heart, and it just stays that way if I think about it. Mm. Just on purpose killing a pigeon for no fucking reason with a pellet gun, just because I was with some other kid who was like, do it. And I did it.
And he didn't.
No, he did it.
He
was a sociopath.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's
I completely expect
Kenny Ringland. I remember him.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, that I remember guy, that social.
There's pack. Always one guy, right?
Oh,
let's do so. Let's set something on fire.
Let's set something on fire. Preferably a dog. Those guys. Yeah, and they're like, no, thanks.
Let's put a firecracker in a frog's ass.
That guy.
Yeah, it takes a lot to do that.
And they just whip frogs like they're frisbees.
Oh, I hated those guys.
Oh,
the little frogs. Yeah,
I don't like this.
After a baseball game that down by the, we had these things, and why am I telling you this? I don't know, man. I just saw we had these ditches in Albuquerque, these arroyos, these like carved concrete ditches for water runoff. And there was one right behind where we played Little League Baseball, and there was little teeny frogs in there. And there was just some kid that was picking up the frogs and just fucking throwing them against the concrete. Just like that was what is the thrill in that? Nothing happens other than something dies.
What's going on outside of that? Like, what makes you fine with that?
To kill things.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand hunting. I'm sure that you guys ate the moose for a year. You cut, he shared it with his friends. You cut it up, you froze it, and you ate it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah.
Than just smashing frogs. Against.
Yeah. Or just killing a pigeon.
I remember
for no
walking
reason.
Or walking along the train tracks one day, and there was a gardener snake on the train. And I just seen it. And then we walked by these local toughs.
Yeah.
And then on the way back, the snake was just gutted and matches were hanging out of it. I remember. And I just remember. I'm like,
those guys. And they kept moving.
Yeah.
That was their party.
Yeah, they just had a good time.
The worst.
But I was just like, where did they get all those matches?
That's what you wanted? Yeah. The matches? Train tracks. Walking along train tracks up there in northern Canada. Or wait, west or south? What is it? What part would that be?
Northern.
Northwest?
Northwest. Northwest.
That sounds great to me. Just just tracks.
Lots of rain.
Tracks forever. Big trees around.
Yes.
Hanging out.
Yeah.
Big gray sky with clouds.
And when it was sunny, it was so good. The rain would outnumber the sun so hard.
How many siblings you got?
I have a sister. She still lives up there. She lives in a smaller town now. She's a teacher in a little Indian village called Hazelton, British Columbia.
With indigenous people?
Yes.
That's noble and good.
Yeah, she's good. She's a good person.
Seems like it.
And that, you think, where I grew up was beautiful, but there, it's way.
What's it, further north?
A little further north, only about 2.5 hours north. But
so what the fuck did you do up there as a teenager? Did you?
Played hockey.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah, we played hockey. In the summer, we dreamed about playing hockey. The shortest baseball season ever.
Yeah.
It started in May, ended June. You know, it was one of those. Yeah.
Right.
So when I actually got to hear about actual baseball, I'm like, 160 games?
What the fuck?
I played 12.
And it's over.
Yeah.
the entire season is the actual series, the World Series of Canada. But you were a hockey guy?
Yeah, I was a hockey guy.
You have to be, right, in Canada? It's a law, right?
You either ski or you play hockey.
Yeah.
And we took skiing in school. It was actually one of those.
A class?
Yeah.
Would you just walk out and there was snow to ski on? Or
we're really close to a mountain.
Really?
So, yeah, it was.
So you know how to ski?
Get some kale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Aspen.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this. I was in Aspen with you.
Yeah.
I've seen you ski before.
Yeah, I can.
I've seen you ski in jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aren't you supposed to?
I loved it. It was cool. You reminded my friend Gene Scarra. I'm like, that's Gene Scarra. No, it's Marin.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can still put them on.
I'm
and
sure
ski.
You could.
I mean, I did all right, right?
I think everybody else was snowboarding and you were skiing. If I'm correct.
Was Mishna there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was like, I tried to snowboard to take a lesson or two, and not for me.
Yeah.
I'm too old to get those things going, but I like to throw on
the
skis.
You can hurt your hips pretty easy.
Wow, what year was that? That was the end of it. That was the year that
the last one, I think.
Yeah, that was the last one for my marriage, too.
Really?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Was it the festival that ruined the marriage?
Partly. It was like me telling that story. Like I did that show, where the storytelling show.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember. Was it The Moth or something live? And I told the story about, getting in a fight with her, and she got so embarrassed and hated me. That was it. That was the end of it, dude. It's all right.
Yeah, it's turned out very well for you. I'm going to be honest with you.
So you're in Canada.
Yes.
And playing hockey, but what kind of trouble you get into up there? Did you have shitty friends and drive around?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
did you have a truck? What'd you have?
Yeah, we did have. We had a pickup truck and Trent.
I'm not pressuring you. If you don't have it in you,
no, we got truck. I talked to a couple friends that are rich enough that they've started car collections now.
I don't know.
And it's quite annoying.
I can't.
And then they go, "What would you have?" And I'm like, F-150s. I'd collect F-150 pickup trucks.
Cause, yeah, right?
Yeah, that's I remember those. Cool, yeah.
Car collection people.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean...
That's when you have too much money.
What do you mean, like Corolla?
Corolla, yeah. Gabriel Iglesias.
He always collecting cars, yeah, too?
He's got VW vans.
He likes them?
Yeah, he loves them. He's like the first VW bug that came to America. And
really?
Stuff like that. Yeah.
That's an odd thing.
Yeah.
I think I'll stick with records.
Ah.
Yeah, it just seems like I don't need to buy property to house my collection yet.
Right.
I don't need to buy a warehouse.
Yeah, you don't need that.
I guess if you have a good time having a couple cars, it's fine. I was just thinking about that this morning.
How many can you drive? That's just.
Well, I think it seems reasonable to me that if you got one that you like to drive day to day, then you got one if you like to go up in the mm-hmm. hills and drive around, and then if you got one that's like a sports car that you can't drive anywhere except late at night.
Right.
I think that's the way to go. And maybe you have a family or, in a family car.
You don't want that.
But I think like Max, if you're being, what do you call it? If you're being indulgent, Max, three cars.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying.
That's, yeah.
Sports car, day-to-day car, drive around in the mountains car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
I think that's
for
good.
A rich person. But when you're sort of like, I have nine of these. It's like, what? It's like people with guitars.
Nine of one specific one.
Right. And that's like I'm doing that with records now. I got three copies of certain records. I just bought five copies of a Dylan record because I just didn't want to lose it and I want to make sure I have it.
Now you got to build something to keep all the... You got to keep
You saw that room.
But you need a vault or something.
See? Now I'm building property.
I love it.
So you had a truck. You're running around.
Running around, playing hockey. Drinking beer. Yes, a lot of drinking beer.
Are you still drinking?
I drink once in a while.
Yeah.
And my recovery rate is not very good. I don't know anymore. About you.
No, I haven't drank 20 years almost.
But nothing?
Nothing. Zero. Sober as fuck. No weed.
No weed?
Nothing.
Because I used to smoke pot with you.
Yeah. Did we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where was that? When did that happen?
Tell me more about us. Tell me more about us. Let me remember about us. I remember you would take me outside the comic strip.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, come
with my dumb one hitter.
Yeah, hey, come with me. And I'm like, all right.
My little wooden box and my one hitter.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I needed people I knew smoke. So
I didn't even smoke. I just wanted to be around you. You dick.
So what was the plan, man? So you're up there in Canada.
I'm up there in Canada. I'm just hanging out with my buddies. I end up in Australia. My mom's Australian, so I end up in Australia for a year and a bit.
Really?
Just touring, wandering around Australia.
This is what, in high school?
After high school. So
did you go to college?
I started and didn't finish.
So you went right after high school. You had family in Australia.
So right after high school, my grandma got sick. We all ended up going over there because she ended up passing away. I stayed.
Yeah.
So came home a year and a half later.
What'd you do over there?
I just had random jobs, and my mom had started a fund for me when I was a child to do something after high school.
Oh, really?
So I had this money that was enough to keep me going around Australia for a year and a half.
Did you go to the middle?
I did not make it to the middle, but hung out at the top on both sides. Went to the bottom. Didn't get to Tasmania either.
For a year and a half, you didn't go to the middle?
I would just stick in little towns.
Isn't there something in the middle?
There is. Yeah, it's a big red rock or something like that.
You didn't go see the big red mystical rock?
I grew up in Terrace. We had rocks before.
But that's a sacred rock.
Yeah, it was going to be hot, though. It was going to be too hot.
Did you see any big bugs?
Oh, seen so many big bugs.
Really?
Yeah. My uncle had a farm. It was a tomato farm, and I stayed there for a month.
Yeah.
Didn't see one tomato blossom. Then realized years later he was growing weed.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you double check with him? Did you get confirmation?
Yeah,
So he didn't tell you
with
that,
his kids. I got away with his kids. Yeah, we didn't have a tomato farm. It was pot, man. So
you're too young to realize.
I was pretty naive.
Yeah.
We smoked pot. Also, where I grew up, it was a hash town. It wasn't...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Like certain parts of Europe and I guess Canada, it was hash.
I think it was because there was a port and I think they used to smuggle it.
From China or
wherever.
Because hash was nothing... Well, I never saw hash when I was a kid, but in Europe, hash was everywhere. They'd mix it with tobacco.
Tobacco.
Yeah, but when I was growing up, I didn't see... If someone had hash, you're like, no, it's not.
Really?
That's not real hash.
I just remember almost every kid had a block of it for some unknown reason, and it would just take forever. And we designed different things to smoke it.
Yeah, like what?
Knives. Knives were big in our town. So
get it under the glass. Like how would you do it?
You stick the knives into the electric stove burners on top.
Yeah.
You heat them up until they're nice and red.
Yeah.
And then you take a 2-liter pop bottle. And cut it in half.
Yeah.
And then you'd poke holes in the bottom of it, flip it upside down, ice in it.
Put ice in it? Yeah.
That way it cools down the smoke. Right. I have no idea.
Yeah.
So, and then you just, you know, like basically.
I don't understand how you. It
looked like a, you know, yeah. So, the smoke you take would come
up. So you'd put the hot hash.
On the knife. Boom. Right underneath the bottle.
Right.
Smoke goes up.
I get it. Oh, okay.
Suck it all
okay.
In.
So, right. Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. And then. That's what we do. We'd go to Frank's Field.
Yeah.
And we'd...
smoke the hash.
We smoke the hash, then go drink at Frank's Field.
That's a good night out.
Oh, it was the best night out. Yeah. And where I grew up...
Frank's Field is
Frank's
what?
Field, it was just a field that Frank owned. So,
yeah.
And it had a sand, like a big, you know, gravel pit in it.
Yeah.
So we'd just hang out there. The kids, everybody knew where the kids were.
They're right, all, right.
You know, yeah. One guy'd drive off once a year and... get lost in the forest. And
oh, is that true?
Yeah, we'd lose him, but, you know, it was always one guy.
Never get him again.
Yeah, never get him again, and nobody really missed him. So, but yeah. But it was, the sun wouldn't, from Alaska, you must know, the sun wouldn't go down.
I kind of remember that, and then it was dark for a long time too, right?
Very dark for a long time.
But you said no sense of time, just a never-ending day that you had to fill.
Oh, you'd just be confused.
Like, did we go to school already? Is this the same day? Terrible.
It's going to start again.
It's an hour.
Oh.
Long days with short baseball season. So in Australia, when did you start thinking about, like, what was your plan to do with your life?
I wanted to do stand-up from when I was very young, but I grew up in the middle of nowhere, and nobody was in entertainment.
Sure.
You know, a couple guys broke out and made it to the NHL.
Right.
So, but it was foreign. There was, nobody came there to...
But you didn't have the goods to be an NHL player?
I was good until I was about 15,
yeah,
and then I remember I went to a camp where I had to fight a grown man with a beard, and he shit kicked me for what seemed like
on the ice
day. Yeah, I had to fight, like, I was going to junior, which was basically college. So it was 16, and I was going a year early, so it was basically 16 to 20. I think there's overage kids that can play that are 20.
Yeah.
And this guy was 20, and I remember it was for the Abbotsford Flyers was the thing that I was going for. And I just remember this guy just kept punching me in the face, and I just like, I don't like this.
That was the end of your
career?
Yeah,
I was just, I'm like...
Was it had nothing to do with hockey?
Well, I
guess it,
you know,
does.
You've got the drive. You got the drive, and I just didn't have the drive to
but
fight.
But that's just
that.
Part of hockey, getting your shit beat out of you?
Yeah, I wasn't a finesse player. I was a big boy getting guys out in front of the net. I was a defenseman. I was you're getting into it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, like, it just seems like I watched that Jay Baruchel movie.
The Goon.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
People just beating the fuck out of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch Ice Guardians and learn about, like, the real side of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is there a doc?
Yeah, it's a documentary, and it's got all the fighters.
He just loves that shit.
It's the best.
Do you know him, Jay?
I think I met him once, but not close at all.
He's in show business, but he just lives up there. He likes being up there, watching the hockey, being a Canadian.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I don't. Sometimes I wonder.
He's in a city though. Like I was like, okay, if I'm getting a show business, my parents live nowhere near the city. My family's nowhere near the city. I'm continuing. I'm going to America.
Right. Well, were there other expectations? Like, you know, were you going to get a job, or
when I got back from Australia, I kind of floated for about 6 months, and then I ended up working in with a blasting company, an explosives company.
Yeah.
So I started at the bottom. I was just a swamper.
Yeah.
So
it's
the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
I would just grab sticks of dynamite, big boxes of dynamite, and take them from the magazine, which is the area that they kept them, and load the truck with these boxes of how many ever sticks of dynamite they needed.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't like you're out there like, just go a little closer.
No, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
and then from there, they asked me if I wanted to learn how to drive the truck that delivered the dynamite, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I started started delivering dynamite, and then from there they're like, "Do you want to work in a gold mine?" And I was like, "Yeah." So I ended up working in a gold mine,
blasting shit.
Yeah, blowing stuff up. It was open pit mining, so we were building roads and just kind of down the sides, and yeah, just and I loved it. It was awesome
to blow shit up.
Yeah.
That's good. And you're not hurting anybody.
I was 20, 21 years old. Just
lighting dynamite?
Lighting dynamite. And they gave me my own pickup truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was, near Hyder, Alaska. Do you know, have you ever heard of that?
No, I don't know.
So there's a little unmanned Alaskan town, unmanned border.
Yeah.
Where there's this Alaskan town because you can't go anywhere in America. And there was glaciers. Yeah.
So, can't get down from there.
Yeah. So there's glaciers in there, and we were working on the glacier at this gold mine, and then we just go down and get drunk in Hyder every night, and it was.
Well, what do you do on a glacier gold mine? What do you mean you just open? What are you blowing up? Is it in a hole?
No, it's open pit. So we're building bigger holes, but we're not going into the thing. So because there's enough gold to be found around. So it's where we were. It's probably where the glacier had already been through.
Yeah.
So there was lots of.
Did you find gold?
We were never, because I was on the blasting team, so we were never.
You couldn't identify it.
The next
crew got in. Found the gold.
I'm sure they walked away with it.
You just made rubble.
We just made a lot of rubble. It was awesome. But I loved it so much. I was headed off to school to become an explosives engineer. That's what I wanted to do. So and then I got to Vancouver. And I tried an open mic, and I had only been in school for maybe 2 weeks. And I said, well, looks like I'm not going back. I'm a comedian.
That's interesting. So I think there's some sort of similarity there in the feeling, you know, like the satisfaction of blowing something up and then the satisfaction of getting laughs.
Yeah.
There's got to be something similar about that.
I would say.
I mean, you don't see the same amount of destruction, but the rush of like, here it's gonna go,
it's gonna go. You knew,
And then like, here's the joke.
And I like that we were gonna have an end. You know, with blowing things up, like there's gonna be something here. There's nothing here, but we're gonna have something here. And stand up's a lot like that.
Yeah.
There's nothing here, but I'm gonna build it.
Yeah,
my words are gonna build it.
Yeah, right. You go. You show up. There's the mountain. It's like, wreck it.
Yeah.
Just wreck it.
Let's take it down.
How did you know you wanted to do it?
How did I know? Jonathan Winters, when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jonathan Winters. I don't know, something about it. I just couldn't stop imagining what he was imagining.
And you're kind of a riff guy. I mean, you're not an improviser. You're a crowd work guy sometimes.
I like to have a conversation, and I like to let it go where it goes. And
But you don't go off in characters, really.
No, a little bit, but not too, you know. I'll make up their story. They give me a little bit of information, I'll make up their story. That's the way I like to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you're inspired by Winters. You knew that you could, that comedy was something people did.
I knew it was something that there was somebody out there, but I was also from the middle of nowhere, so show business to me was an Archie comic.
Right.
You were walking down the street and a guy in a limo came flying by and said, you should be in a movie.
Right,
and that's how I thought it worked. I'm like, well, nobody's ever going to come up here in a limo.
Right, I think a lot of people think that's how it works still.
Still to this day.
Someone's going to discover me.
So, and then as I, went into my teenage years, it was Sam Kinison and Eddie Murphy. I was
screaming on the tundra.
Yeah, screaming on the tundra, but just teaching you that there's no limits.
Oh, that's for sure.
You know, like, if you can make it funny,
right,
take it anywhere.
I think that's true. I think that's true about Sam.
Yeah.
And yeah, Eddie too, I guess, on some level.
Eddie was just, I don't know what it was.
What,
it just,
Raw?
Yeah.
That was the one?
Raw.
Was that the special?
Was that the one? I remember it was on a cassette tape, and it was just, we'd burn it, and we'd all tape it.
In the leather outfit? Oh, you just,
I had no idea.
Oh.
So,
yeah. No, I could see with Sam, you were sort of like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, it was something, nothing.
Nothing sacred.
And then, of course, same time as Jonathan Winters, Bill Cosby was another one that painted a picture.
Not a good picture now.
Not a good picture now. It was a horrible picture.
Yeah,
it was
terrible.
Yeah, you scrape it away a little bit, realize.
That's the fucked up thing about it. Like, it's harder to separate him from the monster.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a young comic, before we knew what he was up to at that time.
Yeah, well, we didn't know.
Of course not. That there was something to be learned.
Right.
Stand-up wise. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so you're in Vancouver, so how do you know to do it there? Did you?
I remember talking to a guy, and he said, oh, you've never been to a comedy club?
Yeah.
I have a friend that goes on at a comedy club.
Oh, yeah?
Do you want to go see him? And I was like, yeah, I want to go see him. So
this is like the first day of school?
Yeah.
Or you're at college, first couple weeks of college?
I was there before.
Yeah.
So you
had a friend in Vancouver?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I had a couple friends down there. And so he's like, yeah. Because he was like, you're going to do that? And he goes, well, was there anything else you want to do? And I said, or be a stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, I have a friend that does that. I'm like, you do?
And who was the guy? Do you know? Still doing it?
Jerry Owens.
Yeah?
Yeah, he had a guitar.
So you don't know if he's still doing it?
I don't know if he's still alive. Like, so, he was really old then.
Oh.
Yeah. So
you go down and watch a show?
I will go down and watch a show, and I see a couple local comics and this guy from Toronto, Evan Carter, and he makes me laugh. And
yeah.
And then I'm walking out, and I see this thing that says open mic contest.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. I'm gonna come back and do that.
Oh, really?
And did you
freak out though? Were you like, now I gotta write some jokes? Or you?
Well, yeah. So it took me a couple months before I even did it.
Yeah.
And then when I got there, I had written the jokes on my hand, and I was so
many handwriters.
Oh, but yeah. They weren't there when I went for them.
Because the first time.
Oh, yeah, they sweated off. So I just did impressions of fish. I remember doing that, and I didn't. Once again, I was still in that phase of. Well, somebody in a limo is going to pick me up
for your fish impression.
Yeah, so for my fish impression. It's going to be fantastic. I'm going to do all the cruise ships. But I didn't. I thought, oh, well, I guess that was it.
Yeah, that was
my big shot. Yeah. And the manager happened to walk by and say, you should come back next week. And I was like, oh, is that how it works? Okay, I'll come back next week. So it just started.
You thought that was it. You didn't win the contest.
Yeah.
I guess you're out.
That's what I thought. I thought, well, I guess I'm done. And then
it's hard to know. Like, I guess if I think about it, you know, when do you learn what the work is?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, when do you learn, like, oh, I got to build 5 minutes. I got to be able to consistently make people laugh. I got to keep coming back and learning how to do this. I don't know how that all happens. But I guess it really is just about a guy going like, yeah, you got to come back next week.
It is luck.
Yeah, and then talk to some other comics, and they're like, "Oh no, dude, you got to get stage time as much as you can."
Yeah, and then they'd give you a little bits of hints, and you're like, "Oh," because I remember a guy named Craig Campbell. I don't know if you remember him from Vancouver. He ended up living in England, and a guy named Tom Stade. And
I don't know a lot of the Canadian guys. I know
most of them end up in England.
I know Brett Butt.
Yeah, he was around then.
Yeah.
I didn't know him, but I think he was already established and going.
And Alan. Wasn't Alan Watt?
Alan Watt, yeah.
He was from Canada. And then
he was from Toronto.
And what's the other guy's name? Who's the long-haired guy?
Norm MacDonald.
No, he's got a beard and long hair. Like, I can't remember his name. I met him the last time I was
there. Oh, I don't know that guy.
Mike Wilmot.
Oh, Mike Wilmot.
He's
awesome.
Great.
Yeah, they were Toronto guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the guys that I started, they just kind of give you hints, and you just kept going. You just kept, oh, okay, this is going. And then I remember Craig was going out to the Montreal Comedy Festival. He's like, you should come out. And I'm like, okay. Because there was no shows around. I would jump into cars. Guys were going up to a place called Kamloops to do shows.
Yeah.
It was 5 hours away. And I was on open mic, and I was like, can I just come up and do it? And they're like, yeah, come on. So I just go sit in a car for 5 hours to do 3 minutes in front
sure,
of.
Sure, I remember doing
yeah,
that.
So yeah, so it was
guest
awesome.
Guest spot.
Yeah.
Guest spot
yeah.
on a one-nighter.
It was, I remember thinking, I was like, this is so weird. They say, we got a special treat for you. And I'm like, oh, how am I a special treat for them?
It's just a little weird addition.
Yeah. Here's something we hope doesn't ruin the show is what they should have been saying.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But you would have to drive like that. That's the weird thing. So there was a whole one-nighter thing, too, in Canada where you drive forever.
4 hours.
And just like for like one show at a weird place.
Mm-hmm.
Weird people.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like the whole town is there.
We'd take a ferry across the Vancouver Island to do those shows. And yeah, just for one night and then back again. It would take forever.
What were they like bars and like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was like a booker in Vancouver that used to book them out.
He'd book them out, and then the guys would get, I guess the guys would get a certain amount of money, and they had to bring a couple people with them, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
So they'd pick who they wanted to take with them.
That was the way it worked?
Yeah.
The headliner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there'd be the one headliner that didn't have a car, and he'd pick the one guy that wasn't funny but had a car.
Sure, of course. Yeah. The driver comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to do 15, 20 to open and drive the guy.
Yeah.
Were you that guy?
No. I never had a car.
Oh. So you go to Montreal. So you tell me the first time you went to Montreal is when I met you or no? 95, 96?
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And that changed everything?
Yeah.
In terms of like how you saw comedy or what you were going to do?
absolutely everything changed. That my whole life changed on that trip.
Really?
Like, I went from...
Were you on New Faces or something?
I was on nothing. I was on nothing.
We just went with some friends.
I went with some friends.
Yeah, and you met them there. You hitchhiked.
I met them there, and then left afterwards because I was dating this girl, and she said, "You got to come back now. We need to talk." And I was probably about 22, but I was maybe 18 mentally. Like,
yeah.
I was innocent. I was innocent. And she dumped me as soon as I got back. I just like, you could have told me on the, I was talking to her on the payphone and putting coins
from Montreal.
She's like, you got to come back now. So I get in the car and I hitchhike back to Vancouver, and she just dumps me.
After the festival?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but it changed everything because.
What happened?
The guy, Craig Campbell, said to the guy, Jimbo, remember Jimbo?
Yeah.
He said, Ian's real funny. You should put him on. And I was like, he's like, okay, well, if we have any spots, we'll put him on. And he said, hang out, because guys, it's so much going on. Guys are late, and I need somebody.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And Lucian Hold happened to see me.
Huh.
And just randomly, and came over and started talking to me, and wanted to know everything about me. And he said, if you're ever in New York, I want to put you on stage.
The comic strip.
Yeah, the comic strip. And I was like, okay. And thinking nothing of it, and I was like, well, I got a place to go on stage in New York, but when am I going to go to New York? Like,
you're going to have to make that plan.
Right.
But, well, yeah, that's the other thing that opens up, sort of like, oh, you got to go to places where the comedy's happening. But Jimbo, like, he just threw you up?
Yep. He trusted Craig so much that he just threw me up. And then
after the first one, he's like, I guess I did.
Do I think I did now? No. But, you know, I guess it was good enough that he just kept throwing me up when he needed somebody.
It was such a tight little room. Oh, yeah. He didn't have you host or anything?
We just, you know.
You're just filling gaps?
Yep.
But, like, not in the same night. Like, you know, here's Ian again.
Hey, guys. Hey, remember me?
Yeah, I was just here. Yeah. Another guy didn't show up.
I've only got 7 minutes, but let's do this again. But they were so busy, they'd do multiple shows in the night because it was such a small room as well.
I just remember the heat of it. Like, oh, we're going to go see so-and-so at the, what was it called again?
The Comedy Works.
The Comedy Works. And you go down to the works, like, this is it. It's like, it was a great room and everything, but I hated the pressure of it all.
It holds, you know, like, held 70 people.
Yeah, but then there was like 30 executives and agents and managers smashed into the back corner and, like, you know, comics trying to get comfortable.
It was just...
I wish I had been up there when I wasn't more terrified all the time.
That was my best Montreal trip because I wasn't terrified because I was dumb enough that I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
So that was, and I understand totally what you mean after that. It was just, when you go on, you just be like, this is it. I gotta do
something.
Have you ever seen the tape of Brian Regan starting three times in Montreal? Like,
no.
Montreal's a bag of dicks. They're just like, they put out the worst video called Worst of the Fest.
They do?
Yeah. And it's out there, and Brian Regan put so much pressure.
And he's so good.
He's the best.
Yeah.
And he put so much pressure on it. I got to start again, and walked off three times.
Was he shooting something?
It was just like one of the galas or something.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah.
Why do you keep walking?
I think because of what you said. There was just
too much pressure.
There's so much
weirdness.
Pressure, and it was weird pressure. It was.
Well, those galas, the galas are like, that room is huge.
Huge.
And, you know, and I've done like two or three of them. And I've never seen any of them. I don't know where they show up.
Canadian TV.
Yeah, and I did a thing in Winnipeg for TV. I've never seen any television I've done in Canada.
That's awesome.
And no one has ever tweeted about it either. I've never seen any reaction to it. I don't even know. I assume that it's been on TV.
Right.
I have no idea. But I've done many of them. But that room is sort of big and weird and heavy.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a groove going.
Yeah.
But it's like 3,000 people, 4,000 people, I think, right?
It's something huge, and it's an albatross. It's hard to get off the ground.
It kind of is, man.
Yeah.
But outside of that, just even doing regular spots, the pressure of all the comics being pretending like they're not competitive, everyone's up each other's ass, everyone's acting like they're friends with everybody else when everybody wants something out of that festival.
Yeah.
And then there used to be before YouTube and you know, people used to go up there not to discover with people.
Right.
So you had that pressure. It was just a fucking nightmare.
I think I've been blackballed, to be honest.
Have you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But could it be the way you talk about it?
Probably. Probably. But that's how it happens. I owe them everything, though.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, if I wasn't at the Montreal Comedy Festival, I wouldn't met Lucian. I wouldn't end up in New York.
So how did that work? Because Lucian, rest in peace.
Yeah.
What did he like about you? Usually
he said, "You don't sound like you look," and I'm very curious about this.
Hmm.
And I'm like, okay. He goes, "You look like you wouldn't have an imagination."
Right.
And I'm like, okay. And I didn't. I'm like,
a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
But,
well, that was Lucian though.
Yeah.
Lucian would cough food on you and pretend it never happened.
Oh yeah.
You know, like that was that's how he was. But
he said to me, I think the only thing he said, "I already got enough angry white guys." That was the first time.
Oh, God.
I don't even remember how I ended up working there. But it was one of those things where it's sort of like, that stuck with me. And then even when I could work there, I'm like, no, I'll go up there. I don't need to fucking
right. do that. I remember, I used to love the weekends and trying to get as many sets
that's
in
what
one
I mean.
Night.
You just stack them up, running around the
six,
city.
Seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, eight.
Yeah, know, you're trying to set a record.
Yeah.
I mean, five or six was a lot, because that means you had to do three clubs at least, right? So then, remember.
You go Caroline's.
Oh, yeah.
Comic strip, stand up,
Caroline's,
Boston, and the Cellar.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the Village Gate used to. Maybe that was gone by the time you got there. Was it?
Is that no? I'm thinking
Raffy's place.
Yeah, Village but I'm Gate. Thinking what's next door to the Cellar. Why am I blanking on the music room? You could do that.
Oh, the Wah.
Yeah, the Wah.
I did the Wah once.
That's it.
Yeah, I couldn't stand it. I'm gonna go over there for a music crowd. I'm weird. I like
the way you'd fight back. I'd be like, okay, I'll try again. I'll do it better.
What's that?
Thank you, Esty. I just want to, I'm totally thank you for that. I just want to be on.
I can't.
Yeah.
So when do you move to New York?
So I go back to Vancouver because this girl I'm dating tells me to come back. She dumps me.
Right.
So meanwhile, Jimbo has said, hey, why don't you come headline my club in October?
The Works.
Yeah.
Montreal.
Yeah, he said, I'll buy you a plane ticket and give you $900. And I was like,
yeah.
Well, I might as well tell my parents to suck it because I've just hit big time. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. And I'm like, hey, Montreal's not far from New York. So I plan it out that I'll do that weekend and then I'll get on a train and head down to New York.
Right.
And I call up Lucian. He's given me his number, but it's the Avail number.
Oh.
So I get the Avail number. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I don't leave any messages. But I'm like, I'm going. I get to Montreal. I do the weekend. I change my $900 into American money, which now is $600.
Yeah.
I buy a plane.
Took a hit.
Yeah. I took a hit, and I buy a train ticket. I get on the train, head off to New York. Never been to New York. Lucian's the only guy I know. I've talked to you guys,
yeah.
You know, all everybody, but I don't, you know, I'm just that guy. I'm not, I don't have anybody's number, so
yeah.
Except for Lucian's, and I'm on the train, and we're pulling into Manhattan, and I can see spray painting everywhere, and I'm just like, I should probably have someplace to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
And when the train stops, there's this piece of paper on the ground, and it's for a youth hostel for $12 a night.
Yeah.
And I end up living in this youth hostel for 4 months.
4 months?
4 months.
So what happens with Lucian?
I call him up. I'm calling from a payphone because I'm trying to keep my quarter. I'm not leaving a message.
Yeah.
And he finally picks up. He goes, are you the person that doesn't leave a message? I'm like, yeah, it's me, Ian Bagg from Canada. He's like, oh, why aren't you leaving a message? I said, because I don't know. I said, I've only got so many quarters. He goes, yeah, come down tonight. I'll put you on.
Yeah.
So I go down and I go on and it goes well enough.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of tank at the same time, but I goes well enough. He says, call me on this day every week, and I'll give you a spot every night. And everybody hated me for that. And he would give me a spot 5 days a week. And I was not good spots. Like they were all check spots or at the end of the night.
Right.
But I would just, you know, he wanted me to get funny in New York style. And uh-huh. That included tanking a lot of times. I remember going on after all you guys would go on and just trying to keep that room alive.
Yeah.
With, hey, I'm from Canada. And they're just like, whatever, we'll eat you. Give us your children.
Oh, like on that second show where half the room's gone. There's like 12 people.
Yep.
Or they all get up and leave right before you go on.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy before you, like, could tell was like, leaves the stage.
Yeah.
And then everyone, half the room goes.
It was Attell. It was you. It was Ray Romano.
Yeah.
It was Chris Rock. It was Chappelle.
Yeah.
It was all these just monsters. And do you remember Red Johnny and the Round Guy?
Sure.
I've never seen anything destroy like that ever or since then, they would just turn that room upside down, and then I would have to go on.
Was Red Johnny the little one?
No, Red Johnny was the big one because the round guy was the smaller one.
I think Red Johnny still works.
He's a voiceover guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about the round guy.
I think he works in a bike shop.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I think that's the problem with being a duo.
Yeah. Right, so they crush, and then
and then
D.B.
like,
Sweeney or whatever his name was. What's his name?
D.F. Sweetler.
Yeah. D.F. Sweetler would bring you on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he wouldn't do any time because he was...
Scott Blakeman would bring you on.
With no time at all, they go, hey, back. You go on and you just like, oh, they'd be so angry at you because they felt you had taken Red Johnny and the round guy
Right. Yeah, your fault.
Yeah, it was your fault. And you're just like, and then they're getting their bills at the same time and you're just like trying to survive. So it just kind of builds a, you know.
Yeah, and then you're running down to Boston to do a show for 10 people and that was as big as the audience was all night.
Mm-hmm.
Like on those Tuesday nights and shit.
I remember following Jim Brewer there and at the Boston and this
on a big night.
It wasn't a big night, but yeah. I just remember I was really new still, and I remember a guy saying to me, "You're gonna die, white boy." And I remember I was just like, "This is
off
comedy."
Stage?
Yeah, as I was walking to stage, he said that, and I thought he meant actually get killed. Oh. And I remember holding my beer bottle.
Oh, really?
Like this, so I could smash somebody if I had to.
Yeah.
So I was just like, he was right. I did die. Sure. I bombed my ass off.
That's always hard going.
That was one of the. That club?
The Boston?
Yeah.
Well, it was the only choice I had.
But did you like it?
Nah, it was weird. It didn't feel like its own place.
Oh.
I remember when they built the seats. I remember when it was just this space that had a window in the back where they poured the drinks before they had the little tiered balcony. Before he built that out, it was just this, all the same floor.
Ugh.
And it was just, chairs didn't look like they belonged there.
Right.
It didn't have its own vibe. But eventually it did when he built the thing in back for the little balcony area.
It was hard.
And he gave away a lot of tickets.
Gave away Barry. Beery.
Yeah, I mean, it was always a shit show in there.
It was horrible.
But no one seemed to be in charge, and no one gave a fuck. I mean, he used to be beginning.
You guys would walk in there like ballers and make it seem like it didn't affect you. I just remember being shaken every time I came off the stage, and you guys would walk out and laugh and go someplace else.
Yeah.
I'd have to go to therapy for 2 weeks after going on there.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it was just like, I don't think the club ever was taken seriously. So I think a lot of us were like, it's great to get a spot in, but who gives a fuck?
But you didn't take it serious. Whereas
I took it serious.
I thought every set in New York was going to be the end if I didn't do well. So.
Right. Now, it was weird. I mean, it was a long time ago, but when Katz was there and, you know, he had his crew. Everyone was kind of, man, it's so long ago. It's so wild to think about it. But Lucian seemed to have a lot invested in you.
He ended up managing me.
Like, what happened?
Yeah, he didn't manage people, but he was always... I don't know. He had something to do with Sandler and all those guys. He was good to me. He was weird, but he was really good to me and helped me find my footing and kind
so
of.
How was that hostel situation?
It was great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I loved living there. It was. I remember the people that worked at the comic strip didn't understand me at all because I would just show up with a different entourage of different countries every couple nights. How do you have so many Japanese people with you?
Who are your friends?
Why are they all German?
Strange international. Yeah. Oh, you just tell them all what to do? Yeah. Like, come down.
I say, hey guys, I'm doing stand-up. You want to come with me? Because when you're in a hostel, you're sharing a room with people.
Yeah.
So,
no, of course.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So then what? Then you were able to get out of there and sort of live there?
I ended up, this is honestly, once again, how my whole world changed was Lucian came to me while I was living in the youth hostel, 3 months, probably one of the last months I was at the youth hostel. And he said, they're coming in to showcase for Conan O'Brien tonight. You're not on it, but I'm going to put you on it right before it happens.
Oh,
so
good.
I was like, okay.
So you're like, it's started in the middle of the show and he puts you on second or third?
Yeah.
Kind of? Yeah.
Yeah. So I would always.
Once they were in there.
You remember those times when it was really, I said, once they were in there. So
Frank Smiley, Paula, Davis.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So I went on and I still didn't get what showcasing was. You just do your best for life. And so I did it he said, stick around afterwards. They want to talk to you. And I was like, okay. And I wasn't even showcasing. And they said, we want to put you on the show. And I had to say to him, I am actually not legal. So, because I just got on a train and came to New York.
Does that matter?
To do TV? Yeah. Yeah. So they actually helped me get my first round of visas.
Really?
So, yeah.
Conan did.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and them and a small agency, they got me my first, I want to say, 3-year visa. So
you did Conan?
Yeah, I did Conan. And then, they sent me away for 2 months while the paperwork was done.
Sent you to work?
Back to Canada.
Oh, you had to go to Canada?
I had to leave the country because it was being done legally, and I couldn't be in the country. So I went back to Canada and just kind of floated around.
To Vancouver?
Vancouver. Hung out in Vancouver. I probably did all the places, you know, the little
doing
driving.
Doing stand-up?
Yeah, just doing stand-up.
Yeah.
So, and then I went down and... after the paperwork was done and did Conan. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember I wore my best clothes at the time, and it was a pair of shorts and like a green, like checkered logging shirt. And I remember Barry Katz thinking, you're the ballsiest guy I've ever seen. Where I'm like, and I'm just like, these are actually my best clothes.
So how did the Conan change things for you?
Made me live in America and started giving me a little bit of work here and there.
Yeah.
I think I did it 3 more times.
Yeah.
And then ended up coming out to Los Angeles and doing, getting a commercial agent, did some commercials.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And then one day I was like, hey, the weather's really nice out here.
Yeah.
Is there any way I can do this from out here? Yeah. And everybody's like, yeah, you could live in Los Angeles.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I was like,
plenty
okay.
of people are doing it.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm going to move to Los Angeles, and just packed up and left. And that was August 2001.
It's been that long?
Yeah.
It's been going all right for you?
Yeah, I love it.
And you did Last Comic Standing?
Did Last Comic Standing. Didn't ever want to do it. It took me forever. I kept getting asked to do it, and I said no, because I didn't understand.
What were some of the jobs you had, though, like, you know, like on TV?
On TV?
Remember you've done a lot of shit.
I've done a lot. I've done, like, a Showtime thing. I did I've done an Amazon thing.
Didn't you host some things?
I've done a ton of pilot stuff that hasn't worked out.
Right.
I hosted some internet stuff
just plugging along.
How's
the draw on the road?
Not bad. Up and down. Yeah. Up and down here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you remember those days.
I do, man.
You don't remember those days at all.
Just
you're too busy hanging out in your massive house, just laughing at people as they walk by.
2 years ago. What do you mean? Not only do I remember it, but it was like not that long ago. I didn't have a draw.
But
until, you know, 2 years into the podcast, maybe 3. So like not till. So it's all pretty new for me in a way. Now you're judging me. I just moved.
I remember thinking that you were going to be Conan O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And wanting to be around you because.
Oh, he's going to have that slot.
No, it's just late night shows interested me so much, and I knew they interested you so much that I want to be around you. And when other people started getting stuff, I was confused.
That I didn't get it?
Yeah, and I'm sure you were angry.
You mean when they were trying to replace him?
What? Just other guys getting different shows here and there.
Over time, yeah. I mean, I felt like I was... But I don't think I was ever really seriously considered for anything. I think that there were people who thought, like, maybe that you'd be good at that. You should do that. But I don't think anybody with any power...
Right.
I don't think I was on anybody's list.
Right.
You know, but I think there was...
I think you were.
You do?
Yeah.
I think there was
How
one
could you
point.
Not be?
I don't know. Man.
But this says you should have been like,
oh,
this,
yeah?
This shows.
This one.
Yeah.
The one we do in my house.
But it says.
Yeah.
It says everything. Like,
sure.
It's.
Yeah. If only I could have had a long form TV show, talk show, where I could sit with someone for about an hour.
You don't need. You need an hour?
Yeah.
You kidding me?
I can do it in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But that's not the same thing.
Did you do Conan when outside once? Did you host?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. On the desk. Yeah, I did it. Oh, that's because I was auditioning for something. Right. What was the angle on that? I don't remember.
Wasn't there a power outage or something?
You know what I think the last... No, it was like it was a bit the talk show on the street. But yeah, it was just me talking to people on the street on the desk. And then that became a segment on some local TV show where I did it. Like I did a bunch of them for like a local TV. I thought that was what I was going to do. Just be on local New York TV on the Metro Channel. That was what the fucking Metro
One.
Something, man. No, it wasn't Metro One. It was, I don't remember, man. It's hurting me thinking about it.
Sorry, man. Didn't mean to hurt you.
Oh, no, no. But yeah, I think things worked out for the best.
Absolutely.
So what do you, what's your big plan now?
What's my big plan?
Just keep touring?
I want to do stand-up, but I also, I'm working, I love stand-up. Like, there's no way that I could ever stop doing stand-up.
Yeah.
I want to do stand-up until the last
breath.
I'd love to
die on stage.
Not on stage, maybe afterwards.
Sure, but, after. Just,
but I love it more than anything that's come into my life other than my wife.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's awesome. And so to me, what's confusing about when you say that, well, I love stand-up. And when I was a kid and I would watch stand-up on afternoon talk shows, I would see the stand-ups and then they would also be on game shows.
Yeah.
So I thought you just did game shows and TV stand-up. Then stand-up. So
it's a job,
the fact that I have to market myself for other things has been very confusing.
Hosting.
To me. Yeah. I like to host, but I've, you know, I'm working on an animated thing that I've come up with.
That's good.
That is kind of, you know, based on a little bit of autism and a little bit of just being an everyday person.
Are you autistic?
I would say I've got a touch of the tism, but I don't like hugging. I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely on the spectrum someplace, but well, do I need help or anything? No.
Right. So you're doing the animated thing?
I'm doing the animated thing. I also created I did a thing for A&E about my wife's family trying to get me out of stand-up, and we did that. And it's,
why'd they want to get you out?
They didn't really want to get me out, but right. they own fishing places out on the East Coast, and they think I eat nachos for a living. Basically, is what is going on.
They own fishing places?
They own oysters and clam farms.
Your wife's family?
Yeah. And they do crabbing and guide fishing.
So, really?
Yeah, on the East Coast in Virginia.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So is that like, is it a big business?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do very well. Yeah.
Huh. With crabs, oysters, clams, and guided fishing tours.
Yeah. Taking guys into fishing tournaments. That's why my one brother-in-law.
Do you fish?
Not well. They laugh at me. I puke over the edge. And
you're not good on a boat?
Yeah. So.
So now you bought this house over there?
I bought a house out there.
So what's the plan with that?
I just want it to be a family vacation house. My mother-in-law lives in it right now, and I just want to. I'm doing renovations on it, and just turning. It's only like 7 years old. I found it on a short sale. Mm-hmm. Didn't pay much money for it at all. It's just basically a house in on a acre worth of land.
Is it on the water?
It's a mile from the water.
Yeah.
And it's actually a mile from the beach, but right behind it comes up the, they call them creeks, which is from the ocean.
So, yeah.
So it's kind of on the water.
Well, that's nice. So how much time do you plan on spending out there?
Not much. Not much.
Just gonna have it.
Not much. Yeah, I'm just gonna have it, and I'll be able to go there when I want to go there. That's the thing. I live out. We live in Long Beach out here. We live in Belmont Shore.
What's your wife do?
She's in occupational therapy.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So we want to be able to go out. She wants to be able to go home. So I'm fine, and I'm fine with going to see my parents. So.
Where are they? They're in Vancouver
still,
though.
No, they're still in Terrace.
They are?
Yeah, they're still up in the middle of nowhere. So.
And they're okay?
Yeah, I'll go home and I'll do a fundraiser every once in a while up there.
For the town?
Yeah, for the town. Somebody will be sick or somebody, something's needed in the town. And
local boy?
Yeah, I'll bring guys up. Maybe I'll just make sure that I'd try to bring you up one time.
Good. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, if you want to go.
Yeah. That'd be great. Give me a call. I'll call you for fish. You call me to go up to Terrace.
And also there's fish up there. I don't know if you like salmon.
Yeah, I love salmon.
Yeah.
It's salmon time now.
Do you
go fishing for salmon up there?
Yeah. Steelhead, sockeye, springs up there. Yeah.
Well, no, I know it's coming into the fish place. I go buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Copper River, steelheads. Yeah. I don't know if steelhead's wild yet.
Yeah.
But the king salmon, the troll
king,
catch.
Yeah. Yeah, just make sure you always buy, don't ever buy farmed.
Right, wild.
It's always wild, never farmed.
That's what
Yeah.
that should be a slogan for something, is it? Always wild, never
always
farmed?
Always wild, never farmed.
All right, buddy. It's good seeing you.
Nice seeing you.
Thanks for coming.
Goodbye.
All right. That was Ian. I never knew the guy, but I've known him for decades, it feels like. National Bag Radio. His podcast is available from All Things Comedy. Whew. All right. I feel my guitar playing's gotten, like, remedial. It's always been remedial, but it's been a little kind of clunky. All right. Here's some. I'll play my new Japanese Telecaster. And why do I qualify it like that? Is that insensitive to call it a Japanese Telecaster? No. It was made in Japan. It's known as a Japanese Telecaster. These are newer Fenders made in Japan. It's a Japanese Telecaster. Boomer lives!